How's it going, guys? You're listening to Treetop Talks. This is Jay Halasik.
This is Andy Sherwood.
Today we're listening to Atmosphere as our background music. He's a singer based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Good stuff. So let's dive right in. Our topics today are going to be Emerald Ash Borer, and the blue ash is our species highlight. So with that,
yeah,
let's talk about the Emerald Ash Borer. We hinted to this in our last podcast a little bit. Why don't you go ahead and tell them what it actually is and describe the insect a little bit for them.
Yeah, let's talk about the Emerald Ash Borer itself. We got an insect from Asia, from I don't know what country, somewhere in, I think, that whole region over there in Asia, pretty widespread. Came over, they say, likely on a packing crate. In 2002, it showed up in Michigan, somewhere I think near Detroit by the sounds of this, looking at their info website. It's been spreading rapidly ever since then. It's covered most of the country, almost. Well, yeah, most of the country, looking at the map. Looks like there's only a few. Well, let me let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 states in the lower 48 that don't have it yet. So
yeah,
kind that of that kind of tells us the magnitude. That's about, you know, a relative. Or somewhere around 80% of the states already have it. So it's something to be on high alert for at this point. It's already impacted tons of cities across the country, wiped out lots of tree populations, mostly in, or most severely in Michigan where it started, but then a lot of those early states are also really heavily impacted already too.
And so a way to identify if you have an ash in your yard and you think you might have the Emerald Ash Borer, it's a small little like bright green insect, and it leaves these D-shaped exit holes. So it chews through the bark of your tree, and what it'll actually do is then it starts feeding on the vascular tissue, and that's what the vascular tissue moves water and nutrients up into the canopy of the tree to help it grow. And so this insect gets in there and they're all feeding on this tissue, and eventually it just cuts off the flow of nutrients to the canopy and the tree dies. So when they're doing this, though, they leave this D-shaped exit hole as they're leaving the bark, and it's super distinctive of the Emerald Ash Borer, so it's pretty easy to identify.
Yeah, they're small holes, so they're not easy to find unless you're really looking for them up close at the tree. But if you see that on a tree, on an ash, you'll know for sure that there's Emerald Ash Borer infecting it. But to try and identify this from farther away, if you see any canopy dieback, that's likely green ash, or likely Emerald Ash Borer, you should take a look, see if you can find some D-shaped exit holes, anything like that, or peel away the bark and look for tunneling, because you'll see little squiggly tunnels, which is them chewing through the vascular tissue and killing the tree. So if you peel some bark off and see that, that's a clear indication of Emerald Ash Borer.
You know, as you're taking off the bark from your wood anyways, because you're a good citizen, you can that's really distinctive.
Yeah, if you've cut a tree down. But also, if you see a lot of woodpecker activity, like, increasing around a tree or on a tree in particular, they're likely pecking at the Emerald Ash Borer.
Well, and that's just kind of... Woodpecker action is definitely something for just insects in general in trees.
Right.
If you see, holes in your tree that look like woodpecker holes, it's probably a good indication you got some type of insect living in there. So
same
goes for Emerald Ash Borer.
Yeah, it's a sign to take a closer look if you see that going on. Let's talk about how aggressively this has been spreading. It looks like it's been about 1 to 3 states per year
since 2002.
Since 2002 have been added to the list of confirmed states with Emerald Ash Borer in them. So that's pretty quick, I think. That's a really fast rate of spread.
They are trying to slow it down now.
Yeah, there's considerable effort trying to slow this down. The moving wood.
The moving wood was a pretty big one.
It's huge. And some cities were even clear-cutting their ash, cutting out all the ash.
Replanting.
That's been proven through numerous studies to be counterproductive. Yeah, that actually
really
cost the city more money, removes all the genetic diversity that currently exists, and doesn't even help the problem anyways. Sometimes it even seems to make it worse. So Yeah, that's definitely not the right option.
Not recommended.
No. What they're doing right now, there's a lot of different strategies that city foresters are using, but one, I think it seems like one of the big ones is just selectively removing the most unhealthy trees that are already infected first, and then the ones that are at the highest risk, the poor condition ones that are stressed by something else that are likely to get attacked by emerald ash borer, removing them, and then just slowly taking out the bad ones as they die off.
And that's a reoccurring theme, I think, in horticulture. It's basically quarantine, you know? If you have a disease outbreak or you have an insect outbreak, get rid of your worst ones.
It's like roaming out most of the ones that are
or the disease in it.
Yeah.
Get that out of there and just try and save your healthy population.
Right. Give the strongest ones the best chance they can by lowering the pest pressure of the other trees, but still giving them that chance.
And so, like Andy was saying, that's one technique that seems to be working pretty well.
Yeah, but overall, though,
it's still spreading.
Yeah, it's still really spreading rapidly, and it's costing city foresters millions of dollars across the country.
This is definitely trying to keep up with it.
It's killing trees faster than they can cut them down and replant.
Every city is going to feel this eventually once that it gets into the state, unless we get... Even if we get a resistance tree, you're still gonna have to remove all of those ash trees, and that's gonna cost some tax money.
Most of the trees won't be resistant. Most of them are gonna come down within the next couple decades here, and then there's gonna be a few decades in between where we're really not gonna have a lot of ash before we get a resistant population built up again.
Yeah,
that takes time.
It's not a quick process, but it should happen.
Yeah, it should get there eventually.
There's hope. We can segue into resistance a little bit here.
Let's talk about some of the ways that we can get resistance and why we're pretty sure that resistance is going to be the way to get through this. So there's several species of ash, each with a different level of resistance. So there's the Manchurian ash, which is native to Asia, and has lived with emerald ash borer forever. So they were designed to work together. They've been adapted to have chemicals that work together that the Manchurian ash kills the emerald ash borer as it tries to feed on it. And so this has allowed them to live together with minimal casualties, just enough to sustain both populations.
Right.
And so that's the highest resistance that's known in any ash. But other ash trees, even some of the ones that are native to North America, seem to have some amount of resistance. The highest being blue ash, which we'll talk about more later. But that seems to be a good option for emerald ash borer resistance in native to North American species. But then there's other species like green ash seems to be the lowest resistance, where that would take a lot of effort to get resistance up. So these other species are going to become really important, but it's also important to keep seed diversity in the green ash, because the fact that these resistance genes exist in all of the different species, they're there in green ash, they're just at a low number. And so by maintaining the diversity, we're going to keep those resistance genes, and eventually this high pest pressure is going to select for them within a couple of generations, and we may hopefully get some resistance in green ash just by selecting
and,
for
it. So kind of like he was talking about there with the generations thing, it actually will take like generations.
Oh yeah,
like
this 10, is a long, long-term goal.
So we're still, I mean, we're already seeing it since 2002, the impact of the emerald ash borer, but we're going to continue to see it for, you know, foreseeably
decades,
probably a decade, 2 decades
before
we really know the total impact of this thing. Like like with Dutch elm disease, we didn't actually really know the impact of it until the late 90s, early 2000s.
Really started setting in.
Right, we saw the actual impact of it, and we're gonna just see that again with the ash, we feel like. But like you said, the need to keep that seed diversity going is important.
And then there's other interesting options for getting resistance into green ash. One possible way to do this is using interspecific hybrids, which just means crossing the green ash with maybe blue ash or Manchurian ash, which are resistant, to try to get the resistance genes into a green ash tree and then back cross into green ash. And so there's possibilities here to get resistance genes into green ash or have a hybrid ash tree that is resistant with green ash characteristics. And this has been done in elm. They did this, they crossed the American elm with the Siberian elm, which was native to the same host range as the Dutch elm disease, and had resistance. Right. So
it ended up working really well for them.
Yeah, there's a lot of cultivars on the market right now that are growing in the landscape that are hybrid elms that are resistant to Dutch elm disease. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing is possible here with ash, crossing the resistant species by green ash. We can develop some resistant hybrids that, you know, still behave and look like green ash and have the same usability and the same good characteristics.
Yeah, it's one of the it's actually one of the more basic of breeding for resistance techniques is,
although I will say it's been tried already and it's, they're not easily compatible, so it is going to take,
just because
some,
it is easy, it doesn't always just actually work.
It's going to take
time.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of maneuvering, I guess you could say, around these genetic obstacles.
There's obstacles to overcome, but
it's doable, I think.
With the modern technology, you know,
there's ways to cross just about any plants and get any genes anywhere. Yeah. So we'll get there.
CRISPR.
Yeah, CRISPR's an option. We're not going to go there. That's a little more in depth than we need to go, but there's gene editing techniques we could be using to get this to happen. But anyways, so there's options here. We got potential. There's hope for, you know, ash. The ash, the genus won't die here. We don't have to worry about that. It's just going to look a lot different in the future.
Right. It's going to change the landscape a little bit. And
huge changes to come, but
point is just we need to start planting diverse.
Right. And we're starting to see that in some of the communities that are replanting after ash has already rolled through, or as it rolls through, they're planting, you know, a little bit more diversely. I'm noticing three or four species instead of one or two, so
right.
It's a slight improvement. You know, we got to take baby steps. We'll get there, I guess. It takes time for the nurseries to keep up with this changing demand too. They need to change what
their
they plant in order
to
keep up.
And
so right,
and
there's going to be lag time here. Yeah. You know, while we work on this, kind of like you were saying, the effects of Dutch elm disease took place a couple decades after. So I think that's going to be the same here, or something similar, at least. You know, we'll see. So I think that's really all we got for Emerald Ash Borer. That covers the main stuff there. Let's move into
species highlight.
Yeah, blue ash.
Fraxinus quadrangulata.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a mouthful for that last one.
Latin name is actually pretty important.
It is very important. So, the quadrangulata, quad is obviously four. Quadrangulata, four-sided.
Yeah.
And there's stems. So, what those leaflets are attached to on each leaf, the stem of the leaf is square if you cut it. It's really cool. It's super distinguished from the green ash, because the green ash is roundish.
Yep.
And this one, if you cut it, you will see four distinct flat sides.
Yeah, and you can actually even feel it. If you roll the stem between your fingers, you can feel there's, like, ridges. There's four sides to it. It feels square, really, because it is. And, yeah, that's
the main
distinguishing feature to tell it apart from green ash. But another
thing
is the bark. It's not diamond shape at all.
Way different. It's grayish.
Yeah.
It's I don't know if I want to use the word flaky, but it almost kind of is.
When the tree's really old, it gets kind of flaky until
it depends
then
on
it's
the size.
Just kind of like really gray bark that's not diamond shape, I guess. If you see an ash and look at the bark and it's not diamond shape, maybe slightly flaky, you know, check those stems. It's blue ash.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really similar, you know, from a distance, but when you take a closer look, it's not too difficult to distinguish them if you look for these key characteristics.
So it's
let's talk about its native range.
Yeah, it's native to Michigan.
It's also native little parts of Wisconsin. There's a couple of spotty, kind of isolated populations in the southeastern portion of the state.
It's mostly referred to as only hardy to zone 4. So the majority of them, it's going to be marginal in the north.
But
in the right place, they can live.
There's, you know, they're in Wisconsin. That's zone 4 or 5 there, so.
Southern Wisconsin.
It's got potential to grow northern, you know, further north anyways. It's definitely worth the chance because it's got this resistance, which we kind of mentioned it earlier, but let's talk about it a little bit more now. Blue ash is, you know, relatively resistant to arbol ash borer, at least far more resistant than green ash is.
And so,
not quite as resistant as Manchurian,
it's not on level with Manchurian, but it's pretty good.
It's still up there, though. It's still a good option for a native species that can at least tolerate this a little bit better.
And so the reason for this resistance is that blue ash, they're saying it's a feeding preference, actually. It's not even so much of a resistance. They're saying.
they've done experiments that I've seen that, or read about, that they... we'll trap the insects in a cage with leaves of green ash, blue ash, and Manchurian ash. They find that they'll eat the green ash leaves right away, and then once those are gone, they'll start to eat the blue ash leaves a little bit, but they won't really eat the Manchurian ash leaves at all. And so they've noticed, and they've done the same thing with actual real trees too, and
field studies.
And eating the vascular tissue and actually infecting the trees and killing them, but. It's basically been shown that they prefer green ash and they don't like Manchurian ash, but they'll eat blue ash if it's their only option. So
we actually might start to see a little bit more problem as the green ash population decreases. Exactly. If it is just a feeding preference, the blue ash might start taking a hit also, and then Manchurian ash in your specific crosses would become very important.
Yeah, that would definitely become a high priority at that point. But there's also, there's a theory that there's a reason that the emerald ash borer dislike blue ash to a certain extent. And within that amount of time, within a couple of decades, that's a whole tree generation. We can get a new generation that has higher levels of
blue ash.
Yeah, whatever that is. The mechanism has really been nailed down exactly. They think it's probably a bunch of different mechanisms.
Yeah,
but
likely a lot of factors involved.
Right. But over, a generation or two, as the pressure increases on blue ash, that's gonna be selected for even harder, and over time here the resistance should increase, and if we keep planting it further in the north, the cold hardiness should increase and it'll become a really good option. I think it has great potential. To be a, I don't want to say a replacement, but it kind of would be a green ash replacement until green ash can be developed with resistance in it, which is going to take time. And I think this is
it gives us
a good option in the meantime.
I think is the big thing that you have on there. It really does give us time. But so let's keep describing this tree a little bit more. It's it goes up to 70 feet tall, and it's got a 50 foot width. It really does look from a distance a lot like a green ash canopy and a blue ash canopy are difficult to tell the difference.
Yeah, ash are pretty...
it's the same
pretty
form.
Pretty generic from a distance with some exceptions.
It's got that same yellow fall color. It's also dioecious, just like green ash. It's got those same Samara seeds that are 1 to 2 inches long.
They're very similar.
That's why those, like we said, the stem and the bark is really important for these, because you really couldn't tell the difference between green ash and one of these without that.
Yeah, you gotta look pretty close to distinguish a green ash from a blue ash.
It's kind of hard to propagate too. That's another, it's usually done by seed, and it's kind of difficult to propagate the blue ash is what I'm reading.
Yeah, the green ash cultivars that were being grown before emerald ash borer came in were being propagated by grafting, like we were talking about last time. They were being budded onto seedling rootstocks. So there were cultivars that were established, and I'm sure the same could be done with blue ash. They could be propagated by grafting or seed.
Right.
So yeah, right now seed is the most important.
Yeah, I guess. Obviously.
Yeah, grafting would come on way down the line in the future. Once resistance has been found, but until then, we need seed right now.
And now you want something that might have resistance in it. So.
Yeah, we need as much diversity as possible at the moment.
Yeah, so, what else do we got for blue ash?
Not much. That's not about it. We've covered, I think, the important things here.
Right. So with that...
All right, let's wrap this up then.
Yeah.
So we appreciate you guys listening. Leave us a comment if you got questions, comments, complaints, whatever. Tell us we're wrong. Tell us you agree with us. Whatever. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think? So that's all we got, guys. Thanks for listening.